Hi, I'm the Strategist Cowboy. I am trying out one American IPA beer today, called Grunion IPA, from the brewery Ballast Point, and I am comparing it with one Swedish IPA beer called Brooklyn Defender, from the brewery Brooklyn. At least I was told it is a Swedish beer on Systembolaget's website. But I think that Systembolaget has made a mistake this time. The beer can is sized 11 ounces or 33 centiliters, which is the European standard sized can. But when I search on Brooklyn Defender, the only thing that comes up is an English speaking website saying that this beer brewery is located in Brooklyn, New York. Some further investigations leads me to the conclusion that this beer assortment is also brewed in Sweden by Carlsberg Sweden, with a license to kill. Let us assume it is. Carlsberg Sweden was at one point in time bought from the original Carlsberg in Denmark. I know it's a mess, but I'd say that no one of the two beer assortments I'm reviewing today is an underdog at all, beer culture-wise, beer type-wise, or ABV-wise here. It could go either way, this competition. I'll start with a review of our first contestant, Grunion IPA. Grunion IPA has got a 5.5% ABV. This beer assortment is not represented on Ballast Point's website, at least not any longer, not that I can see. This beer assortment costs about 20 Swedish kronas, i.e. about $2.30. For this American standard sized container. That is about 77 cents per 4 centiliters of beer. That is not very expensive for a craft beer hauled all the way from San Diego in California. San Diego lies north of Tijuana in Mexico, so Southern California, which means that they probably ship their beers to Europe via the Panama Canal, and that costs plenty of money. To ship cheap line articles like beers through the Panama Canal, I imagine, is not very cost effective. But neither is shipping them to Europe all the way around Canada's northern waters, or around the south of Americas. I don't even think they construct any ships at any shipyard that can travel such a long journey without refueling the ship's fuel tank on fuel oil at least once. Refueling ships' fuel tanks is done often relatively far from the existing oil field, but virtually always close to existing refineries around the world, which can complicate things. And it gets important for those extra miles that one has friendly ports one can use to refuel one's ships with fuel oil. This is one of the main reasons why classical American conservatives have been all for globalism. Since a nation with higher living standard is a nation that is less likely to cause any troubles, because they rely on American products to maintain their relatively high living standards. Countries connect logistically, and new ports for selling American merchandise and buying the up-and-coming countries' raw materials are built. Another upside is that with more US-friendly fuel oil supplying ports, the US gains an advantage over each single port because the American ships can easily redirect their shipping routes to bypass, sanction, or blockade a specific troublemaking port nation. But globalism isn't so dandy in the US politics any longer, since many countries are partly surpassing America economically and/or getting means to process their own raw materials in order to sell the finished product instead of the unprocessed product, making America lose money, influence, and power. Albeit, this is not a zero-sum game, and it has never been one. The world economy grows long-term, and with that, the American economy grows, till we run out of raw materials and oil, that is. We are close. You may come back with a rebuttal that America buys a lot of technical stuff from China now, and why would they do that if it is like a claim? That is exactly my point. This is a struggle over control. But this was supposed to be a beer review. Let us get back on track. I hope they haven't cut back on the quality on this beer in order to save money and thus make this beer assortment sellable concerning its price tag here in Europe. Since this beer assortment is not represented on the brewery's website, it could be solely an export beer. Export beers are often suspect to me. But it is labeled a craft beer after all. At least I think it is a craft beer, and that is what counts. The brewery has managed to appear as if they make only exclusive craft beers, either because this is actually the case, or because they are experts on marketing, or both. Knowing the Americans, it is easy to ascertain that they at least are experts on marketing. I'll let my experience with this beer decide whether this beer assortment can be considered to be a craft beer. We'll sort it out in a couple of minutes. Ingredients in Ballast Point's Grüner IPA beer are water, malted barley, hops, and yeast. This beer comes in a 35.5 centiliters, i.e., 12 ounces green colored can of interesting looking design can. Design has always been one of the United States' strongholds, comparable with their film industry. Who hasn't admired American military uniforms and helmets throughout recorded U.S. history? They understand the psychology of the human mind, with emphasis on man in human. The beer can has a sextant on it, and Ballast Point I can only guess, has something to do with seafaring, ports, or ships. Interesting to learn is that Grüner is a small, slender Californian fish that swarms onto beaches at night to spawn. The eggs are buried in the sand, and the young fish are swept out to sea on the following spring tide. Not sure if I want this to be on my mind as I drink a Grüner beer. Systembolaget says that this beer is best served at a temperature between 8 to 10 degrees Celsius, i.e., about 46 to 50 degrees Fahrenheit. The brewery says nada about preferred serving temperatures on their beers. How about the experience then? A very nice hoppy aroma, very good. More than two fingers tall head. More than a two fingers tall head, and it's amber-like in color, a little bit light. Or at least I can see my fingers through the glass, and it's amber-like in color. Very good aroma, as I said. It's pretty rich. It's rich. I don't think it's bread-like. And it's not yeasty. Well, perhaps a little bit, just a little bit. I think it's malty, but it's difficult to say because of the hoppiness in it. It's very much hoppy. The taste on my palate is nice. This is a craft beer. Is it sweet? No. Not exactly. It's kind of bitter. It's bitter. It's not candy-like, but there are some fruitiness in it. Tangerine, maybe. Yeah, I think so. Spices, definitely. Some spices. And hoppy, as I said, several times. The undertone is hoppiness. The carbonation level. Difficult to say, but I'll see in a minute, perhaps. Is it creamy? No. But it's smooth. And it's not acidic, and there are no aberrations. Well, it's smooth. Okay, what about grading then? I like IPA beers very much. But I like almost all beers if it's good beer, if it's a good beer. I'd say that I give this beer eight or nine devils out of 10 possible. I'd say, yeah. 8.5, if I could imagine such a number. It's very hoppy and bitter. Okay, what about the carbonation level? I think it's normal. I haven't burped yet anyway. Okay. Let's move on to our second contestant. Our second contestant is the American IPA beer Brooklyn Defender. From the brewery Brooklyn, located in Brooklyn, New York, as the name of this particular beer assortment suggests. But this particular beer is brewed in Sweden with Brooklyn Defender's recipe. The Brooklyn Defender has got a 5.5% ABV, just as the former reviewed beer. This lager beer costs about 21 Swedish kronas, i.e. $2.40. That is about 87 cents per 4 centiliters of beer. The IPA beer Brooklyn Defender consists of water, malted barley, hops, and most probable yeast. The hops are of unknown but probably American sorts. The malts are of unknown sorts, but you can probably presume that it is American malts. The Brooklyn Defender comes in a 33 centiliters, i.e. about 11 ounces can. The can has got an orangey comic book design look a la Fritz the Cat. I noticed that the commercial on their website features a case of Brooklyn Defender lying around a bunch of toys for boys. Awful. The beer is best served at 8 to 10 degrees Celsius, i.e. about 46 to 50 degrees Fahrenheit, according to Systembolaget. The brewery doesn't say a thing about serving temperatures for their different beer assortments. But how about the experience then? Its aroma is not as strong as the former beer, but it's got a 2 fingers tall head, and it's clear, light orange colored. I can see my fingers very well through the glass. Okay, the taste. This is very similar to the former beer. It's hoppy. It's pretty rich. It's not exactly bread-like. And it's not exactly yeasty either, not very much. Probably malty, but again, the hoppiness appears much more in this beer. Taste on my palate. Good. Very much similar to the former beer. It's not very sweet. But it's bitter and hoppy. It's not not candy-like, but orangey fruitiness in it, or again tangerine peels. Something. It's got spices in it. I like the undertone. Carbonation level. Low to normal. It's not creamy. It's not acidic, and there are no aberrations. Yeah. What about grading then? I grade this beer. Eight and a half devils out of 10 possible. Just as the former beer. They're very similar. Maybe this is a slightly not so good compared to the other one. I mean, the other one was a little bit more rich. So it wins on that, but it's not worth giving it even half a point, half a devil more. They are the same. It's just an minimal difference in taste. So 8.5 devils. Okay. Absolutely don't drink and operate heavy machines, military or civilian. Drink responsibly or not at all. Don't drink at all if you're underage or pregnant. Thank you and see you later, alligator. No, let's do that later on. Anyway, thank you. This week's lesson is a tactical and technical lesson. It's called Anti-Materiel Rifles. The AS-50 is a British semi-automatic rifle with Raufoss MK211 caliber 12.7 times 99 millimeter NATO ammunition. In other words, 50 BMG or Browning machine gun ammunition. The AS-50 can hit moving targets at a distance of 1.5 kilometers. It is recoil damped, which means that you can follow and hold on to the target even after the first shot has been fired, and that it does not as easily whip up dust and reveal the sniper's position when fired. In addition to being armor-piercing, the ammunition has either explosive tips or a zirconium tip that ignites its own gases, to be used against the fuel tanks of enemy vehicles. It has been designed to be able to stop armored vehicles and can hit an engine block and extinguish the engine. The Russian equivalent of the AS-50 is called OSV-96, and it is a heavy semi-automatic sniper rifle with 12.7 times 108 millimeter caliber. The Swedish Armed Forces equivalent is the American Barrett M82A1, i.e. the Swedish Automatic Rifle 90C. These weapons are the most cost-effective weapons imaginable. Ammunition of the type Raufoss MK211 cannot cost more than $6 per cartridge, and it can stop or even destroy a vehicle that costs millions of dollars. I imagine that in order to best use the AS-50, you should be firing at an armored vehicle, such as an amphibious assault vehicle, from behind, e.g., when this vehicle takes a curve or to the right or left in a road junction, only after the vehicle has passed and exposed its engine, which usually sits in the stern, where the armor, in this case aluminium, is often thinner on many types of combat vehicles. The firing angle must not be too large, because then you lose the bigger effect of shooting at the thinner aluminium armor in the stern. You can combine with another AS-50 that shells the last vehicles from before the curve. In order to respond to AS-50 operators, in the event of enemy air landings in specific areas at access roads to areas that are important for both sides, such as ports and airfields, you can do like following. Use anti-sniper units with dogs to clear important and sensitive roads and road junction sections, or crossroads, where you can expect the other side to assume that our armored vehicles must pass before we pass there. These spots may be wide main roads, not too far from the main enemy landing area. If we are to take alternative smaller roads towards the goal, we must first, at a certain phase of the enemy invasion, have banned all civilian vehicle traffic on the roads. A tank 122 is 3.7 meters wide. Each of our vehicles with an image monitor should be given USB sticks with image databases of important and sensitive road sections, possible enemy observer and sniper positions, i.e. observers with anti-material rifles or javelins. In this way, the commander does not necessarily have to be familiar with the area and the terrain to achieve a successful mission, because he knows exactly where someone may be in an ambush and how the environment and topography in the area in question are shaped. Measures must be taken at every road junction, settlement, or hill before we continue into a sensitive, unknown, and indefinite area. The Americans can have as many as 6 teams of snipers in the same approximate area, which makes it difficult for us. The flushing out of 6 teams of snipers will be time-consuming. I therefore recommend that we bring with us a dog handler with a couple of tactically trained tracking dogs in each company. If we act on the basis of image databases, there will not be many problems, despite PA7s located outside of Lund, non-existent knowledge of landscape, terrain, and environmental conditions in Västra Götaland. This means that P7 and P4 will less often have to exercise outside their normal training fields, which saves a lot of money for our defense force, and the operational effect gets improved. All possible access routes to, for example, Gothenburg Airport, must be documented in peacetime for the database. The database should be set up in such a way that it is easy to get an overview by being diachronic for each access road and with the earliest and most likely ambush positions highlighted in each image. The database images must be taken both from the road and from the air. I do not think the time factor is a big problem with the American attackers. The most likely scenario on the West Coast is that we will be allowed the time it takes to take these precautions, because an American attack presupposes that Russia first attacks in the East. Exacto. What exactly is it? DARPA's Extreme Accuracy Tasked Ordnance, Exacto, program in 2014 conducted the first successful demonstration test with 50 caliber bullets with in-flight guidance. Yes, you heard me. I said in-flight guidance. YouTube shows when Exacto shots maneuver in flight to find targets in motion at a place other than where the sniper initially aimed. Exacto's specially designed ammunition and real-time optical guidance systems facilitate tracking and guidance towards its targets by compensating for weather, wind, target movement, and other factors that might otherwise have prevented a successful target hit. It is still unclear what impact Exacto has. See you later, alligator, at a while, crocodile.
Oh, thank you.